This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Turn it up. Let's go.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Their reaction was...
Was what?
Oh, crap.
Yeah. No, that's your interpretation. How should Michigan have reacted to Alabama being announced as their opponent?
Earlier on the show, ESPN college football analyst Robert Griffin III. Coming up, Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel. Fox Sports college football insider Bruce Feldman. Comedian Stavros Halkias. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
That is correct. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We got decisions being made everywhere. As I just discussed, the Zach Wilson experiment and world and era is back again. So if he was drafted, it's Zach Wilson 1.0, right? And then he got benched and he came back. That was 2.0. And then he came back and got benched and it's 3.0. And then this year was 4.0. And then he got benched, and this is 5.0. I've lost track.
4.12. Oh, you know, Apple does like the...
Oh, yeah, so what is
it's like an OS.
Is he the Cupertino 4. Of quarterbacks?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
4.1.2.
And the Minnesota Vikings just said it's Josh Dobbs. They're
no way,
not going
really?
Nick Mullins. It is Josh Dobbs. The Pastronaut is staying in launch position, and he gets Justin Jefferson back.
All
his weapons.
Let's see.
So there's that. Bruce Feldman is going to join us in studio in about 20 minutes' time to talk about everything going on in college football. My God, is everything going on in college football. But joining us now, I have not seen this man since Germany. And I love chatting with him, certainly when he's kind enough to stop by the show. He is the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Mike McDaniel, back on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing, Coach?
I'm great. I'm great to be here.
Thank you.
I mean, you're like one of my favorite guys around.
Thank you. Right back at you.
So, yeah, I'm just excited on this, whatever day it is. What is
the? it's on the verge of week 14. You know what I mean?
Like that's, yeah, so that doesn't even matter. It's erroneous.
we're right there. Good to see you. How you been since Germany? I haven't seen you in a couple of weeks. How you been?
No, so we've been doing a lot less of that losing stuff, so that's been cool.
It's good.
I think it was a cool, some of the best things that happen to your football team aren't always on the short and the seems the best. So,
yes.
If you're going to have, like the experience in Germany where we had a team that, was fully invested and came up short, you want to turn it into something good. I think that, the lessons learned from that game and that experience and, the prioritization of this season in every player's mind has been invigorated, and as a result, we're experiencing some football growth. So we're right in the middle of it. This is what you prepare for all season: is to what your team looks like in December, and so we get to experience the residuals of all of those deliberate practices and moments. Since then and before then, so good spot.
How are you a different coach than day one when you walked in the building with the Miami Dolphins? How are you different, do you think, Mike?
When I got the job?
Yeah. How are you different?
Yeah, I think yeah. Well, I would hope that there's pillars that are very consistent, but at the same time, the way I've kind of approached you try to approach things from a humble standpoint because the one thing that can get so many people care about the job they're doing to such a high level that, and especially in this job, you're supposed to have all the answers. But the biggest thing that can be a indicator of success or failure in the position is admitting your infallibility. So I think that keeping an open mind to, okay, you made this decision. What are the exact results? And then adjusting from that on a daily basis and not running from that is on the surface a hard thing as a head coach, but it's something that I've really tried to stay true to. So I think I'm a completely different coach than when I started, because I've learned so many different lessons, whether it's from a team standpoint, maybe deviating from some of the most important things that you believe in, or getting distracted by that. I think one thing that I've learned on the job is how much my emotions can set off spirals for other people. Like, case in point, if someone's walking past my office and I haven't seen them all day,
yes,
and I'm in a weird headspace and just I have like negativity, then I just look up like this and go back, and then they're spiraling for the rest of the day. I'm like, what did I do? And now that's the most inefficient brain work that you could possibly have, because it has nothing to do, but just being more aware of that.
Yes.
So that you do right by everyone that you're able to touch, because you don't, you don't quite realize the scope with which you can reach people until you're in the job. And it's like, oh, it's everything. So yeah, I'm not allowed to have, moodiness and moodiness or ugly face, resting relative to my normal face.
Yeah. You gotta be more focused on your resting face, coach.
Yes,
when you're the head coach,
the resting face has to be, but it is real, because
it
you
is.
Just,
I hear you.
Yeah. You get into coaching to impact people's lives, and then to see how just bringing energy on a day that people are kind of flat, how that can affect people. You see, realistically, I can doing my job means I have to leave it all out there each and every day. I'm not sure if I quite understood that to the degree, but I think now I'm much more versed at that. Take care of myself better knowing that I'm more hydrated.
Okay. Yeah. You can't cramp up. You got to make sure. No, but in all seriousness, because you can lose yourself as a head coach in the NFL. You could lose yourself, lose contact with people, lose contact with taking care of yourself. I've seen that, time and time again. And then, chatting with you in Germany with the whole crew, we when you left the room, we were just so taken aback by everything that you just said right there about how you take it seriously about reaching people as a coach and how you focus on that. And you were so eloquent about your, relationship with Tua. And I did my best to try and communicate that to when I got back here in this chair or when I was talking.
It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Thank you so much for that. I thought,
I thought
it was excellent recording.
It was really awesome. And but one thing I haven't really brought to light, and I'd love for you to do it here if you don't mind, is Tyreek Hill. Cause We get the sense in our world, in our fantasy football world, that you just roll the footballs out. He's fast. He's just going to be good. And that's it. But you were telling stories about between years one and two, and what you sort of, I guess, gave him homework to do and what he did in between years one and two of your tenure there. And I'm wondering what you're willing to share about that here.
Well, Mike. I mean, I think there was a lot of learning in year one, and I don't think it was a coincidence that in the off season before this year that Tyreek was throwing out some bold predictions. He's a very smart individual, but he also knew that he was undergoing kind of an evolution within himself, and really recognizing the state of the union. He came to the Miami Dolphins as the guy that had done it. He was obviously it's very rare to have 6-for-6 Pro Bowls from any player. Yes. And then, be all world and all this stuff. But he recognized that it could be bigger than that. I think after digesting the first year, he understood that, if I am my best self, I'm not only making plays, but what an impact he has on the organization and every player in it. And that mindset, this season, he has gone. He's really, you can see that he's unearthed a aspect of himself that maybe he didn't even realize he had, and he's super happy in that it really brings him satisfaction to, uplift and uplift all of his teammates. And he really puts ownership on the entire team's, state of the union by his, what actions he can do, what he can invest more into, and what he can, he's a game changer, not just when he has the ball in his hands, but how he goes about preparing for Sundays. So you want to talk about how hard, I mean, we have a team that plays hard each and every week.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a team that's very prepared in practice because they go hard every week in practice. That is something that, I'm not sure if we could capture this exact element of what this team is without the best player on the team, maybe in the league, really selling out each and every day of practice. It seems like a small thing is everything. The pride that he's taken in blocking, and then just the overall understand, like, he is so smart and took the time this off season to really understand everything that we're telling him as a receiver, as far as route depth, is to tie in to timing with what the quarterback's doing, so that he is, he gets the ball immediately out of his break, which is where there's the most separation. So I can't speak about him enough. If there's all the flowery language in the world, I would add a couple more words to speak on what I've seen from him, because it's he's always been able to make plays on Sunday. But I would be hard pressed to think that he's ever impacted a team the way he's impacted this team this year. And that's by him fully committing to the responsibility that he feels he has as a star player that's paid the highest at his position in the league. And I don't think he likes handouts. So he's definitely earning all of those dollars.
Mike McDaniel, a couple minutes left with the Miami Dolphins head coach. How do you close out? I mean, I know that's a very, esoteric question, but that is something that I'm sure you're thinking about here, because as we're talking, as you and I were leaving our respective positions in that stadium in Frankfurt, you were behind the Chiefs. Now you're not. Now things have broken to the point where you, if you will, control your own destiny. So how do you close? What do you say to this team to focus on each and every single one of these opponents and wrap this one seat up and get a week off in January?
Well, I think the key to the end result that you're talking about is not talking about it at all.
Yeah, right.
It's ironic, but it's one of those things. Like, we are in a situation currently after 13 weeks that, man, I'd be super fired up if it was a 13-game season. I'd probably take my shirt off right now. but it isn't. And there's a ton of distractions that come with any sort of success. And the bottom line is, we've been talking about all season about how we prepare for an opponent and working on that regardless who the opponent is. We've been keeping, with long vision, understanding that bottom line is, you're going to play in an elimination game, regardless of what your season looks like, at the end of the year or in the playoffs, and you're going to want to be your best in those situations. So in order to do that, we can't take a week off. The only game that actually exists is the one we have against the Tennessee Titans. And I honestly think, our team is at a spot where they're really leaning into that and understanding that. One of the reasons why we were successful on the road against, I think it was the biggest road victory that the Dolphins organization has had since 1978 against the Washington Commanders.
Mm-hmm.
And that was as a result of us not worried about any standings, anything, but our process and how we prepare to perform and play and have fun on Sunday. So you handle all that stuff the way that has positioned you to even be talked about that way. And that's a complete immersion into the only thing that does exist, which is today preparing for one opponent, not five or six.
Got it. Hey, listen, last one for you. Again, I could talk coaching philosophy with you all day long, and so many different people, you know, would maybe think you're not, just based on, again, you like to have fun. You got a great sense of humor, that you're not cold-blooded when you're going after something you want. And then I was watching the Black Friday game, and Al Michaels told a story about how you met your wife. So, you know, I think that's example A, right? That, you know, don't get in your way. Did I learn that, Mike, from that story?
What you learn is seize each and every day.
Yes.
And there's opportunities aplenty if you open your eyes.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, is that the moral?
And you're rhythmic. The key part.
Was that the story? The eurythmics? Because I don't know if Al got into that part about it.
Oh, no. No. So I felt bad because the story was true.
Okay.
However, it was emphasized. You just had a short time to talk about it.
But, of course, yeah. But you can't tell that story in between snaps. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, and it's that's kind of what happened. So, right.
So what,
it seemed
what,
like I was threatening somebody's job. I was in jest. I said that to Steve Baylark.
Okay.
In jest, because he knew that I was a running back coach, and so I didn't have the power of hiring and firing anyway. But it was more to emphasize the urgency with which to take action.
Yes.
I've identified something that's more important to me than you.
Yes.
That's all that
was. That's how you communicated that. And then,
you know,
right.
I think you went short on my dance floor prowess. and that was really the moral of the story. But it was true.
Yeah.
Met her at that nightclub in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And started a long distance relationship. That like 6 months later, she moved out to right outside of Dulles Airport in Virginia,
right,
to cohabitate with me while I was coaching for the Washington football team at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's a real story. I have a lot of random stories in life.
No, instead, but at least that one. Hey, look, and Steve can't be upset because, you know, you're married. You know, you
have,
you know, like,
I don't know. You'd have to get him on the phone. I don't think his mindset was on marriage at the time. I was the wise one thinking about the big picture.
Yeah, the long term. You're marathoning.
Well,
you're not sprinting. You're marathoning. Yeah. You're not sprinting. I get it. I understand. And you know, now you got a kid, and so now you're the silver medalist and best dad ever right now.
Oh,
coach. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to tell
my
you.
Daughter would vote differently. She is actually. She texted me and said that she disagrees with that. She thinks I'm the best dad.
Okay. Understood. You know what? It's all subjective. Cool. Great to chat with you. Really appreciate you stopping by here. Always enjoy our conversations. And you're the best, man. I really love talking to you and watching you do your thing. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. And I'll still keep coming on as long as I'm tricking you into thinking that it's worth your time. So.
It's the greatest trick. It's a very great Jedi mind trick. That's not the interview you're looking for. Very good. Thanks again, Coach. Take care of yourself.
Appreciate you.
We need to get that, TJ. You literally just said it. We need to get that
last look,
screen capped and memed or whatever. Him just being like,
when I brought up his wife.
Yeah,
I met his wife.
Hey, gotcha.
As long as, what was his thing at the end? As long as
he's worthwhile to be had or something. Yeah. He, I mean, what a wave. He's got a brilliant. He's got a beautiful mind. That guy, man.
Yeah, sure does, man.
The Dolphins have got themselves a winner. And they're the one seed entering week 14.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
They're taking on the Titans on Monday night after the Chiefs take on the Bills.
They could win the next two. They're 11-3.
It's fun watching him on Hard Knocks, too.
The in-season. I didn't even bring that up. So I guess, will we be on the in-season Hard Knocks?
Great question.
I assume they're shooting that, right?
Great question.
I was wondering that yesterday.
You know? And the Chiefs are taking on the Bills, and the Ravens are taking on the Rams. You know? fun stuff. Let's take a break. When we come back, Bruce Feldman on the destruction of college football. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, ready audience joins in less than 2 minutes. First of two times I say hello to you, Bruce Feldman. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great.
Do you go to New York for the Heisman or no?
Not anymore.
You used to then, right?
I did. Now, what this week for college football used to be, or still is, but now that the Hall of Fame event is in Vegas, so it used to be the Hall of Fame event would be in New York City at the Waldorf Astoria, and most of the heavyweight people in the sport
stuck around,
would be there like meeting, and that's where a lot of coaches' interviews would happen. Now the calendar's bumped up, so it's less of that, and that event is now in Vegas. My former colleague Reggie Bush got inducted in the Hall of Fame last night. Bunch of other ones.
Fantastic. So. Good for him.
Yeah.
He deserves legend. It. He was one of the greatest college football players of all time.
Yes.
Of all time.
Maybe the most exciting college football player ever.
Yeah. The Fresno State play. That's the one where he.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Across the field and then gone. It's like, dude.
When NFL Network began, we were not allowed to talk about him. Bill Polian came in and said, you may not talk about players who are not eligible. We wouldn't even think about it in a million years when we first came on the air. Reggie Bush. Wow. Was so obviously a future dynamic professional football player that we started talking about him, and they came in saying you are not allowed to talk about players who are not until they declare themselves eligible. That doesn't happen anymore. But it was he was unreal.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. He was a game changer. And then I remember he showed up to the Super Bowl in Detroit for an event I was at, and he's staring out the window looking at the snow, and I'm like, it's the first time you've seen snow, huh? Joking, and he goes, yeah, it is.
Last year.
From 619.
You know what I mean? So we're traveling, me, him, and Leinert would often, with California from LA, would travel to games, and there was a day.
Hold on, let me just jump in real quick right here. We're back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network telling Reggie Bush stories with Bruce Feldman. Go ahead, finish your story about Reggie.
So there's a seat missing in first class, and I went up to the flight attendant. And I said, you know, one of my coworkers, I think, is supposed to be in that seat. I don't know. Do you know if he's coming? She goes, what's his name? And I told her. I said, Reggie Bush. She goes, you mean the actor? I said, the actor? I was like, these Wendy's commercials are out of control right now. So, no, he's a great football player. The actor. But he was actually very good in the commercials.
He was so ahead of his time. Look at what the Philadelphia Eagles are doing right now on short yardage. You know? The bush push. That's why they call it the tush push.
Hey-o.
You know?
Yeah.
The unfortunate version. I prefer brotherly shove. But, I mean, anyway, Bruce Feldman is here from Fox Sports and The Athletic. I am sitting here at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. When the College Football Playoff Committee announced their Final Four, in my head, I'm on NFL Game Day morning. I'm talking about it. And, you know, I start thinking to myself, who are some of the people who I respect and appreciate? What are they thinking about it? You were coming to mind. And then I went about my day, you know, for the professional day of football. And then I turned to my phone and then I see the headline. College football has always had the best regular season in sports. It doesn't anymore. And I'm like, okay, now I know how Bruce feels about it. I'll give you the floor.
I actually didn't think about it that clearly. It didn't resonate until I actually sit in there watching this. And they are 13-0. They were in a Power 5 conference. By the way, the guy who will probably win the Heisman this weekend, Jaden Daniels, who ran through the SEC, they did the best job of slowing him down. And they were leading LSU 45-17 with a minute left in that game. Like, it was not close. They dominated them. Their defense is really good. But their offense, now that Jordan Travis is out for the season, struggled. It has struggled the last two games. Now, this past week, they were playing their third-string quarterback because their backup, Tate Rodemaker, who has played, and last year he led them to a comeback win at Louisville where he was impressive, but against Florida in a rivalry game, he was shaky, but he also left the game with a concussion, didn't play this past week against Louisville. The committee took it upon them to say, well, that offense that we just saw on Saturday night, we don't think it's a good matchup. We don't think they have a chance to win that. Well, that guy who is playing, Brock Lynn, wouldn't be the guy to start anyway. But the committee already just wrote them off. And my problem with this is the games need to matter. This is an undefeated team. This is an undefeated team who, by the way, scheduled two really good SEC opponents. It's not their fault that Florida stinks this year. But, in the non-conference, they ran through the rest of the league. They have a lot of talented players on both sides of the ball. And here's Alabama, who lost at home by 10 to Texas. It wasn't anything fluky. They did beat Georgia, and that's a legitimate big-time win. Two-time defending champs, they knocked them out. But the week before, if you want to talk about eyeball tests, they barely beat Auburn. And Auburn's not good this year. I mean, Auburn the week before got smashed by New Mexico State. But the committee could not fathom the idea of not having an SEC champ in there, even with one loss. And obviously, the SEC has been the most dominant conference in college football the last two decades. This has not been a great year for the SEC, though. There's no way around that. But the committee just couldn't bear the thought of no SEC team. And ultimately, they screwed Florida State.
So let's stroll down a little bit of pushback lane here. Certainly since my colleague across the aisle, Chris Brockman, feels completely differently about this.
Well, he's wrong.
Well, here we go.
That's so harsh.
Because your point is that, sure, Jaden Daniels was held down by Florida State. It was week one, though. What do you say to that?
That's when the game was played.
Okay.
That's
essentially the preseason, right?
That's what you've been saying to me for days. So, and I'm not just saying because I agree with him. I'm allowing for the pushback conversation to be had. Because you're not the only one who feels this way.
This defense, though, is also the only one who's held a Jeff Brohm offense under 200 yards in 5 years. Like, they're really good on defense. They have really good receivers. They're a talented team. The trigger man struggled the basically you're going off of one game. It was at Florida in a rivalry game. He didn't play great. Okay. But that's basically what people are writing off. I'd find it hard to believe that if Alabama was beating Georgia and on like the last series, even though they were winning, if their quarterback got hurt and, you know, it was out for the season, that they would have written off Alabama the same way. I just don't buy that.
What about the idea that the College Football Playoff Committee did include in its thinking a result from the season in that they couldn't take Alabama without Texas?
I think that's very true. Like, I think if Georgia won and was undefeated, you know, Georgia's number one, Michigan's two, Washington's three, and then maybe Florida State does go. But I think it was like they were boxed in because they couldn't take Texas without taking an S Alabama. They just could. I don't think it, to them, that was probably, this was probably a more palatable solution than that one was.
Would there have been a bigger outcry if they had taken Florida State but taken Alabama and left Texas out?
Yeah, I think head-to-head is hard. Now, it's not Texas's fault, by the way. We were just talking about, like, oh, you know, Florida wasn't very good, and that's who Florida State was playing. But the Big 12 was really bad outside of Texas. They played an Oklahoma State team that lost to South Alabama and UCF. Neither team is anywhere near a top 25 team. Lost them like 78-10 by a combined score.
But to be fair, the Big Ten outside of Michigan and Ohio State, with all due respect to Penn State, it was one large wasteland. I mean, Iowa's defense, so I guess half of Iowa, you know, we have to include Iowa's defense was championship quality. I think you could say that.
But you have, you have two very talented teams in there. I don't think, you know, look, Penn State's offense this year was really disappointing.
Right.
I get it, but I think they are, you know, I think they're going to get the benefit of the doubt, quite honestly.
So while we're playing what if Oregon had beaten Washington? Do you think with the other results that came down, they would have left the Pac-12 winner out? Like, see you later?
No, I think Oregon would have still gotten that spot.
Okay.
I do, because they would have avenged their one loss. It was a close loss, and I think people looked at Oregon on the eyeball test and were like, all right, they're talented on both sides of the ball. They have a really good quarterback. You know, ultimately, I just think that the committee, you know, got some feedback here. It's like, all right, well, the matchup, we've had a lot of blowouts in the playoff. And I think if you're ESPN, what, you didn't want that. You're paying a lot of money for this.
So you think Texas winning was the death knell for Florida State? Because even if Georgia had beaten Alabama, the SEC's getting a team in.
Yeah. Right?
And then Texas winning gave them the opportunity to put, what, a one-loss Big 12 team in?
Yeah,
over,
one loss with one really good
over
win.
Over Florida State, because Big 10's going, Pac-12's going, SEC's going, and Florida State would have gotten in over Texas, or so Texas gets in because Alabama won, is what
you're
saying.
Yeah, and so you've always had this really flawed system. There are five Power Five conferences
for four spots.
Yeah. Right. This is the potential for this to happen. Always. It's just the last year of this before we go to 12 next year.
Yeah.
It's when it really splintered apart on them. And, you know, it was almost bound to happen. And it just hadn't happened like this until now. But like in the past, you know, Cincinnati was undefeated and they came from a group of five conference. And I think people thought it was a pretty good team. But I don't think anybody looked at them and go, oh, yeah, they're one of the I don't think a lot of people looked at them and go, oh, they're one of the four best teams. And if you're going to go by four best, you know, who does Vegas think? Who does, you know, if you ask Daniel Jeremiah and the NFL personnel people, they'd be like, oh, Georgia or whatever is one of the four best. You know, like that's the get out of jail free card for a lot of this is like the best is now really Trump's most deserving. And if you asked me, you know, and this is to me, the wrong way to approach it. But if it's like, oh, on a neutral field, who would you pick? Well, on a neutral field, me and Vegas and everybody else were picking Washington to lose again to Oregon. That didn't happen. It's still like,
yeah,
so.
I mean, the whole business is just like, you know, the results matter. The records matter. Let the chips fall where they may, because that's all that matters. Not like let's try and figure out best and final, figuring out
like
all that stuff.
How would you feel if you're an Ohio State fan? If you're a Michigan fan.
Yeah.
What did I do? If you're a Michigan fan and late in the game, J.J. McCarthy re-aggravates like a leg and then he can't play. Like, and all of a sudden it's like is the committee now evaluating Jack Tuttle whatever?
Let's be honest, too. I think Stephen A. Smith nailed it completely when he said if Deion was the coach of Florida State, he'd be in.
Yeah, I think they nailed it.
Nailed that completely. Yeah.
But Deion also said yesterday that he thought the committee got it right.
But he could say, obviously, what he feels in terms of what he thinks is right or wrong. But the bottom line is, the question is what should be done and what, you know, what happened.
Is the Stephen A. contention that because Deion's a bigger star than Mike Norvell that he would get?
Well, no, because if this is about getting people to turn on their television sets.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. And I, you know,
Works for ESPN, so he would probably know more of what their thinking is than
maybe so. And so you know,
when also in terms of Vegas too, Bruce, Georgia is a 14-point favorite over Florida State.
Yeah. Well, look, Florida State is probably not going to show up in much of a their player. You're going to get a bunch of guys who are going to opt out. I don't think people are going to read into whatever's going to happen in that game. And I'm like, I don't know what Florida State's going to show up. You know, I don't think that's going to be a fair representation if you have some guys going, you know what, I'm just going to go to the Senior Bowl instead.
Or so do you think Florida State would be able to give Michigan a good game or better game than Alabama? Or hold on a minute. That's the wrong way to phrase it. That had Florida State gone, Michigan wouldn't be peeing down their leg reacting to Alabama being named. Is that the better way to put it? Because I'm sorry, I don't want to make it seem like Michigan, you know, but views, you know, like getting a better game from Alabama, that whole nonsense.
It doesn't matter to me who they are more scared of or not. That should not be the criteria.
Well, that's what Boo Corrigan said. They asked the coaches on the committee, who would you want to play and who would you rather not play? And I guess the answer came back, you would rather not play Alabama and Nick Saban than Mike Norvell and his backup quarterback. And they're like, well, that's another metric, sold.
So who would you rather play, Texas or Georgia? Use that metric.
Exactly. You know, I guess. I don't know because
you
once the
ball. You shouldn't have put TCU in the playoff last year then.
Toe meets ball. It's all bets are off, man. That's what the beauty of football is. The magic carpet rides. You know, pumpkins turn into carriages. That's why we love this sport more than any other. Or college basketball, too. I mean, that's the actual phrase about the Cinderella slipper fits. Like, what are we doing?
I saw something the other night when Trevor Lawrence got hurt in Monday Night Football and somebody had tweeted, it's like, okay, now are the Jaguars going to be disqualified from
the
playoffs?
Exactly, and good thing they weren't there to eliminate Cincinnati with Jake Browning lighting it up. Bruce Feldman here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Yes, but now Jaguars really don't have a chance to win the Super Bowl if Trevor Lawrence is out. Let's be honest.
Okay, let's be honest, because Nick Foles didn't happen. You know, honestly, you know, Jeff Hostetler never happened. That never happened. You know, honestly, look at O.J. Anderson's hand. There's a big fat ring on it.
Yeah, but you're doing probability. It's the committee's chance to take that into consideration. It's their duty to do that.
Is it?
You think Florida State's would have beaten Michigan? Come on, be honest.
Let me ask you this question.
I don't.
How does it feel to be on the business end of Bruce Feldman's sort of eyebrow arch questioning your thought process? Because I've been on that for about 10 weeks. How does it feel for you? It's not comfortable, is it?
I think Bruce and I are more on the same team than you think.
Not on this subject matter, I don't think.
I don't know if we're on this subject. You're my guy over there, but this one, the part I don't like is I just feel like if you can't be better than 13-0. The object is, you know, to win the games. Do you want to be impressive? Yes. But at some point, we're not judging one-loss teams. The part I really don't like about this is we're now all of a sudden taking to TV executives going, who is the matchup you really want?
It's a TV show.
But
that's the reality, and I think that's where
it's a game show.
That's where your column nails it, and the headline nails it, even though I'm sure you didn't write the headline. Those get written by somebody else. Yeah. Well, whoever did it nailed it, because this is about TV. That's why the Pac-12 no longer exists. That's why this game between Washington and Oregon will be a Big Ten matchup from now on. That's why there's a reason maybe for Mike Norvell and Florida State to look at each other and say, why the hell are we in the ACC if this is the way it's going to come shaken out when we go undefeated? And that's why, you know, ACC folks should push the hell back with every fiber of their being right now, even though maybe it's different with 12 teams next year.
A lot of chatter about how the ACC leadership didn't want to expand. You know, it was like part of the delay of why it didn't happen this year. You can believe whatever you want to believe on that subject, but that would be some irony in there. Again, it's a juicy topic. I think that, you know, if Alabama goes on and beats your alma mater, I think people will go, aha, see, they were deserving. And look, I don't fault Alabama. They, you know, to me, it's like this is probably the greatest coaching job Nick Saban's done since he's been in Tuscaloosa. That team wasn't very good at the beginning of the year. They got a lot better over the course of the year. They're a really good team. It's just it's not about Alabama. It's not about the SEC. It's really about Florida State and the principle of this.
The principle of it. And so what you're saying is if Alabama wins, then those who say that what's wrong with college football has proven out because Florida State didn't make it, right? Then Michigan is fighting for college football, is what you're saying.
Are they America's team again? Is that what you're saying?
That's what you're saying. So if Alabama
saying.
Wins, college football writ large loses. That's what I just heard. Am I wrong? That's what I heard from Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports and The Athletic, which is really weird because that's not normally the stance he would take. Please tell me if I've heard that wrong. Did I hear that wrong?
I think
you're
it's
like, if Alabama wins, everybody who says Florida State should have gotten in because that's what's right for college football and that's what college football is all about, that if Alabama wins, those people lose. So Michigan's fighting on their behalf in the Rose Bowl. Am I wrong?
I think it's hilarious we're talking about college football and principles and expecting them to do the right thing.
There you go. Now we're on the same team again.
You know what I mean?
That's what I heard.
I got you back.
I don't know if my ears are working. What I heard, the everybody is those who don't like college football and what it used to be. Michigan versus them too now.
Those plucky Alabama underdogs.
No. Are they underdogs?
Yeah, point and a half.
Okay.
Ooh.
It is a little interesting, though.
Oh, it sure is. This whole thing is fascinating. It is fascinating, you know. And next week when you come back here, we're going to be talking essentially deeper about college football free agency.
Oh, it's there. Way on right
we're
now.
We're in. I mean, the transfer portal's open. Kids are entering it right now. I'm sure there are multi-million dollar deals on the table. You know, signing period is that's nothing. We're in free agency. And I'm sure next week it'll be talking about who's losing, who's winning,
We're talking about Arch Manning, Bruce. Where's he going?
Well, this whole thing fits into two buckets for the portal with quarterbacks. It's the guys who are proven, and there's, you know, the Cam Wards, Dylan Gabriels, guys who put up numbers. And then there's this other batch who are like big recruits who haven't really done anything, whether it's Dante Moore, Aiden Childs, Arch Manning, you know, if he ends up in there, like there's a bunch of guys who would fit in that category. It's like, okay, do you bet on those guys or do you bet on the guys? Because it's literally a bet now, because you're going to have to spend a lot of money for some of them. You're probably gonna have to spend in the low seven figures.
Wow. That will be next week. I greatly appreciate. So you are going to Vegas for the awards?
No, the thing happened. Reggie's deal and the other guys who went in
okay.
last night.
So you're home. You're home this weekend. You watch Army Navy just like the rest of all of us?
Yeah, I'm hoping for snow like we
sometimes
get.
That's always great. Oh, my gosh. New York state of mind, man.
Best rivalry in sports.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can't wait to see which coach is more likely, Army and Navy's coach, to blow a whistle and hop up and down amongst all of his players and let them dance on the field.
Go?
No, I won't ever. Yes. I won't ever.
I think your coach might be the one who's the blow a whistle guy.
So my guy wears cleats during games because he's got more career NFL rushing yards than Bo Jackson. All right? Facts. I only spit them here. Including,
I can't wait to go to the Rose Bowl.
Bruce Feldman here on the Rich Eisen Show. Thanks for coming in, sir.
Thank you.
You bet. Bruce Feldman here. Oh, boy. Don't go anywhere. Back with more. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. Or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
There's somebody on Twitter, and it could be Bob, @real_BobCostas. Then you read the Twitter bio, and you begin to think something could be up. How are you, Bob?
I'm good, Rich. Late last night, and then again this morning when I woke up, dozens of texts, some claiming it must be real, some saying this can't be true.
Yes.
And one said, this is the best indication that hell has frozen over since the 04 Red Sox or the 2016 Cubs. But I am here to assure you and everybody else,
yes,
that the fires of hell are still very much blazing, because I am absolutely not on Twitter. They have taken the bogus account down. And I began thinking, you know, what would I have to do before I ever deigned to be on Twitter? What? Like, binge watch The Real Housewives of Orange County, make a return trip to Sochi just for the nostalgia of a Pink Eye episode, star in a sequel to Basketball, or just for you, Rich.
Yes, Bob.
Make a special trip to the NFL Combine. All those things will happen before I'm ever on Twitter.
Okay, so this is the real Bob Costas. We can confirm that now.
Yeah.
Twitter needs that.
Oh, my gosh. Your son tweeted it out that this is not you.
When I saw the first screen grab that Keith sent to me,
yes,
one tip-off should be, look, I'm a reasonably humble and self-effacing guy.
Yes.
But would I knowingly shortchange myself 7 Emmys? Like, I actually even get the number of Emmys right.
Exactly.
I said that. I said 21 seems a little light.
You got to pull a scam. Get your ducks in a row.
Oh, man. The great Bob Costas. All of his appearances on our YouTube page. Okay. So back here on the program. And so sometimes things happen in the world that makes me stop what we normally do here and, if you will, stray out of our lane of sports talk and conversation about pop culture and things of that nature. And, you know, and what usually causes me to stop and do that on this program is something that occurs in life that makes me think, what if I said nothing? I don't want my kids to look at me and say one day, Dad, you had a platform, you had a microphone in front of your face. Why didn't you say something? And that happened yesterday when the school presidents of Harvard, Penn, and MIT were on Capitol Hill testifying at a hearing in the House of Representatives on anti-Semitism in college campuses. Now, growing up, one of my cousins went to MIT, and we were so proud of him and proud of the fact that he went to MIT. My brother went to Penn, met my sister-in-law, met his wife there. And I had such great times on that campus, and it's an incredible place. And Harvard, obviously, is a spot where, you know, Susie being from Boston and, you know, I'm from the Northeast. Obviously, there's dreams. You want to send your kids to Harvard one day. Seeing the answers I saw and heard from the school presidents of those three institutions of higher learning to the simple question of whether they consider the phrase or the statement of genocide against all Jews to be a violation of codes of conduct on the campuses or considered a violation of the code of conduct in relation to bullying or harassment, and their answers not being unequivocally, yeah, that violates it, and just equivocating with a bunch of word salad and nonsense Now, you could sit here and say, well, it's legalese because they have to leave themselves some wiggle room. That's nonsense. The question was from Elise Stefanik of New York, asking the school president at Penn if about whether genocide against all Jews was a violation of code of conduct. Her answer was, if the speech turns into conduct, it can be harassment. Oh, so we have to wait for the genocide to happen before you kick someone off of campus? Is that right? She called it a context-dependent decision. How about the context of what's happening in the world right now? Where hate speech against Jews, and by the way, Islamophobia is through the roof too. How about the context of just being against all hate speech? And it starts with this subject matter. Harvard's president said that genocide, somebody advocating for genocide against all Jews being a violation of their code of conduct, quote unquote, can be depending on the context. What? Hey, by just allowing that speech makes people comfortable to commit the genocide. You understand that? By not being unequivocal and saying, yes, this is a violation, and anybody who violates it is off campus. They can't go to Harvard, Penn, or MIT. By saying, well, it depends on this, that, the other thing, makes them comfortable to commit the genocide. It is the lesson you learn when you walk into museums of tolerance or Holocaust museums around the world, including ones that I've been into recently in Berlin, Germany, and Tel Aviv, Israel. It's the first lesson you learn, and I can't believe you've got to tell people who lead these institutions of higher learning that. And certainly the presidents at MIT and Harvard, just reach out to Bob Kraft. He's in the neighborhood. He's created the foundation to combat anti-Semitism. And you see the commercials all around the football games that we're watching right now with the blue square and the hashtag as well. Stand up to Jewish hate. I cannot believe the answers I heard. It is frightening to see those answers from people in positions of leadership and higher education. Are you kidding me? The answer is yes. When you're advocating for genocide against anybody, that's a violation of code of conduct and is a form of harassment or bullying. Forget the context. Get out of here. And it's just really mind-blowing to me. In this day and age, I never thought in a million years that I would never want to send my kids to these schools. Forget that. And for, you know, this whole politics thing, there should be nothing political about this, left or right, at all. No politics. It's not your political stance. And it's mind-blowing to me. And to these folks, you know what I want to say to these folks who are in the position of power like that? What if you take out Jews and put in all lives? And that comes across as maybe like polarizing because those folks who were sitting up there on Capitol Hill unable to give the answer about Jews. Certainly when we were talking about all lives matter, we're at the forefront of the world there. And for me to say that, it sounds like for me to be polarizing, because this is not polarizing. Well, what about you? What about that section of the world? And what about Muslims right now? They should be all included together in this. What the hell is the matter with those people? On Capitol Hill, in front of the whole world, couldn't say the word yes, unequivocally. No, it's context, this, that, the other thing. And if it's action, then we can take action. Oh, let's wait for the genocide. Instead of stopping it in its tracks the minute you can when you hear the speech.